Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday, and welcome to Restoring Our Roots podcast, the voice of the decriminalized nature movement. This podcast is a gathering space where we explore the wisdom of entheogenic plants and fungi, the beauty of natural healing, and the importance of reconnecting with the sacred earth. Twice a month, we'll be hearing from visionaries, healers, and advocates all over the world who are working with entheogenic plants and fungi, exploring realms of consciousness, and returning us to a balanced relationship with nature. My name is Larry Norris. I am the co-founder of Decriminalized Nature. I'm also the national organizing director. I've been lucky enough to meet people all over the U.S. and the world to help them pass policy. We've had quite a few cities pass now. I think about 29 cities across the U.S. have passed policy, something similar to the Decriminalized Nature policy. So if you're interested in helping support the movement and connecting and figuring out how to pass policy yourself, please reach out to us at decriminalizednature.org. We do a monthly orientation and we can set you up with all the tools you need to make things happen. I'd also like to introduce our behind the scenes master there, Rachel. Appreciate you being here today and helping us out. As always, Rachel's been such a big part of this show. So thank you for being here and always bringing your good energy and your skill set to this conversation. And also really appreciate you putting these out on after this will goes out. We're going to be putting it out the next week, the following week on different podcast platforms like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music. And I believe this is going live on YouTube right now. So I don't think we have to repost it there, which is great. If you'd like to make a donation, please do so. Support us at any of these different locations by just clicking the donation button or finding us at decriminalizednature.org and clicking the donation button there. So helps support the podcast, help support the movement, help support more people having access to entheogenic plants and fungi. Also for the live listeners, Rachel will be gathering any questions or comments towards the end of the show. So the last 10 minutes, we'll just be responding to any questions anyone has. So if you do have a question or you're interested in anything Alex or I have saying or Rachel as well, please just go ahead and shoot something in the chat and we'll address it towards the end of the show. Really excited today to have our next guest, Alexandra Plesner, who is the founder of Psychedelics Design. She's done some amazing conferences recently as well. She did this really great psychedelic awards ceremony that happened not too long ago. I was really excited to meet up with her. We've had some really great conversations just on creativity. But from creativity, there's so many things that open up the door from that. You go to creativity, design, you know, how do you speak about these materials to people that don't understand? How do you speak about them to people who do understand? And then, you know, that goes into systems theory and change on a broad scale, transformational change of society and culture and et cetera. So it's been really a blast to chat with you. We've had some good conversations over a little while, but I've always been interviewed by you. So now it's time to turn the tables a little bit and finally give you an I'm excited to that. So much gratitude to you, Alex, for being here and look forward to future events you're planning and really have a lot to talk about today. So I'm excited to really dive in. So how are you doing today, Alex?
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited and nervous to be there because, yes, usually I'm the one asking the questions. And yeah, I'm really excited to have a conversation. And this time people are listening in. I'm always really enjoying our, like, what we talk about. And I know, like, we can go off on all sorts of topics. And you really help me understand more the context of things. And so, yeah, I'm really grateful and super cool that I can be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So maybe we can start off just with a little background bio. Where are you at? How did you get interested in this area? A little bit more about yourself and anything else you think the audience would be interested in knowing?
Who knows what the audience is interested in? Right now, I'm in Austria, and this is actually where I'm from. I'm in Austria, Tirol, which is where I'm born. It's a really small place in the middle of Europe, and like my small, like the village that I was born in, like now I'm sort of in a town. It's in the middle of the Alps. I'm really enjoying that I am around nature. I've been, however, living in London up until the pandemic, and like went there to study and never looked back. And then since the pandemic, I'm a lot back and forth. Also spend a lot of time in LA for work, but I'm always very happy to come back to nature. In this space, how did I arrive there? I can't quite remember. How I got interested was, however, because I just thought, I was always very interested in how the mind works, right? And how things are connected. And so, of course, when I heard of a potential tool that alters the mind, I was like, all right, maybe that's also a tool to explore the mind. Maybe, you know, that this is a way to understand it. And through that, I got to know about magic mushrooms. Right, so like the first instant, heard about psilocybin and what it does to the brain, and that's got me interested because I thought if that does so much to the brain, like my little knowledge back then, I thought it must be positive, or it must be able to help and do something for patients who had like a stroke, like my father had. And so that was really my entry point, and also thinking of Alzheimer's or paranoia, you know, like things that I know, like friends of mine struggled with, my grandmother struggled with Alzheimer's. And I just thought, maybe there is something that this medicine can help. And so that was basically my first point. And then, me being a designer, I studied art, I studied design, right? I've worked in design agencies or for like on client side. And so I was thinking, yeah, you know, but what can I do? Like, I'm not a scientist, like, I'm not a neuroscientist, not a doctor. Like, how can I learn about this and how can I help and support? And I had no plan. And so I also did study again, psychology, just to get a deeper understanding of human behavior and decision-making process, more so because I was interested how I can apply that deeper into my work as a design strategist and researcher mainly. But already did that then in context with psychedelics, because then I thought, all right, I want to understand what psychedelics do to the mind, what is the creative process, what does altered reality do to the mind, like VR, XR, AR, and also what does nature do, and then how can we eventually synergize the three. So, like, yeah, long intro, but this was a little bit my journey. And I started psychedelics design as a blog, I would say. I just that nobody read. I just wanted to sp start speaking to people, and then I started to share my learnings, I guess. And I got interested in having other minds speak with each other. Essentially, with the first conference event, I just was thinking, oh, I would love to hear this person talk with that person, and I can listen in. And so instead of asking person A and person B to go on a call with me, I asked them to speak at the conference, and then I could sit in the audience and listen. So this is literally how it happened
It's a smart
and
idea,
how it still happens. Yeah.
right? Yeah, that's the best way. Is it's like, okay, how can I set up? And I like what you do too, because you set up those types of conversations with a theme that, at least the conversation that I was involved with, the theme that everyone is interested in that's talking, but they all come at it from different perspectives. So
Right.
you're hearing, like, the Venn diagram rub, so to speak. You're hearing a lot of these extra tangential ideas that are coming together and then meeting at the center floor of your panel there.
Yeah. I'm really eager in having conversations, also controversial, like when I know like people might have different opinions, but are sort of, you know, going in the right direction or together. I think this is really interesting, because that's, you know, you can learn something from that. And I guess I always wish that everybody leaves this conversation inspired. And so I guess that's just my goal, because everybody just donates their time. Like, they have all very important things to do and have busy lives to live. And so I'm very flattered and honored that everybody made time to come on to the events, or to speak with me on the podcast, or yeah, to teach me anything,
Right.
really.
We'll address this again towards the end of the show, but for folks that are interested in where that last conference is, where would they find, are the videos up, or are they still in process, or can we post the
You're
video
still in
that, or can we post
process.
some of the clips that we have? Because I know you sent the one that we had. I don't
There's a
want to.
little, yeah. There's like, I mean, you have like the podcast, right? But from the past events, I am about to publish some on YouTube. You can just see like a little snippet on the website. I think it is in the about section. It's like psychedelics.design. And yeah, I know.
It's coming soon,
I
everybody.
know.
Everyone's getting, you got to build up the desires, right? Everyone's excited and, waiting for the next. The hype is there. The hype is there. So keep an eye on the Psychedelics Design YouTube channel. Sounds like will be the first place, or the website will be the first place to be able to get that. Awesome. Okay, so obviously we're going to talk about all of that good stuff in just a minute. But not many people that are out here, and I think we've talked about this before, and I don't really remember how it was. I mean, I remember you talking about it a little bit, but what is the sort of traditional ancestral Austrian relationship with mushrooms? Like, what's the conversation happening like out there when you get past the sort of the stigma and the prohibition and all that kind of thing? Is there a history there? Do people are they familiar with it? The general context in Austria, what is the sense there for people that maybe aren't familiar with that area?
It's an interesting question, first of all, because all my grown-up life I spent not in Austria.
Okay.
So I think it's very good that I'm here now because I was a little more disconnected to culture here, but that's maybe also due to, and I need to explain that because my family is like a mix of different places, right? And so it's like largely Italian as well. So like the way I grew up and within that small town was already mind wide open because as you can imagine, like my one grandfather was an ice cream maker, the other grandfather was a filmmaker, and he made nature documentaries at a time that nobody could care less about nature documentaries. So you can see from that point, I remember as a teenager even, like I had mango, a fruit that I knew that my first ever boyfriend didn't even know because you just couldn't, like, you know, it was just like not common that you get it. So like this is the mindset like where people come from. Now functional mushrooms have always been a part of it, and like I don't know how to explain that right, and like not talking utter bullshit, but I also know like going into a pharmacy was always like a really incredible experience because pharmacies here in Austria do make their own medicine as well, and what's called also homeopathic medicine or like plant medicine was is like a normal still that you go to pharmacies and they give you a certain mix of herbs for like teas when you're sick and so on and so forth, right? You have like the traditional Western medicine, of course, right? Which I feel like is growing more, but the other ones are like the others, like still holding up. But all the pharmacies are also having their own mixtures. And for example, I just recently bought from my mother like a lion's mane mix from the local pharmacy here. And so I think this is really growing and normal, although there is the stigma about magic mushrooms. So here's the thing, it's decriminalized in Austria, right? And you can even buy the spores of mushrooms in shops, and they can grow it. You shouldn't eat them, but you can't, right? And so it's like I guess it's growing here more. We have like exactly one psychedelic society that is in Vienna that I have never heard of until just like a year ago, even, you know. So there are like a few psychologists and psychiatrists that I know that are very deep in, but it's still the stigma is still huge, and the fear of this just being drugs and just abused is, and you know, you get just sick by taking them. Is really, really, really high still. I would like, there's no doubt about it, like for all ages. And like anything that alters the mind can be dangerous. And so people, I guess, are more afraid of being in that danger than being open to learn about what the positives would be.
And do you have
Like,
any
super
sort
long
of,
answer, sorry.
no, it's great. Is there like a lot, any, like some, there's like folklore in some places that there's like the gnomes or the forest people, or is that kind of embedded in culture as well? It sounds like there's already an open relationship to nature. I understand that nature can
Yes.
heal and all that kind of thing. But is there also then the sort of like deeper connection with nature in terms of these like characters that emerge that become sort of a, you know, almost a mythos of the community?
I mean, there are some stories, and we always took care of nature very much so. And you always, yes, you have, of course, the stories and fairy tales of, you know, of the wind and so on. But I would say this is these are like fairy tales that you grew up when you're little, and these are also stories that teach you to respect nature and be mindful. However, I can see that this lessens a lot, and a lot of people would not quite like grow up like that anymore. Like on the other hand, I've just seen there's like a new kindergarten, for example, and the kindergarten is in the woods. And so kids are literally encouraged to be outside at all weathers, playing in the woods, building things with their own hands. And I think this is so important. This is how I grew up. And then there was this break where you just see like kids being on the screen and within closed buildings. And I was, yeah, this is really not so beautiful to see. Then in terms of characters, for sure, you have more and more people now also jumping on that, seen that shaman sort of person on Instagram, I can do that too. So this is now also, I can see that also popping up and increasing. But yeah, otherwise, I wouldn't know too many people in that direction, frankly. In my circle of friends is so different. Like, because I've not been here much, like my friends are all over the world, but I think here it's like a psychiatrist, like really classic psychiatry, like has his own space for a very long time. Like the other one is an artist, like exploring plant medicine through her art, and like can't really quite talk about it. And I think it's important that it gets into the conversation that some plant, like plant medicine, is not is aren't hard drugs, and that there is slowly I can see like this differentiation on different characters exploring that from old to young. So I think that's a nice mix, right? So I don't know if that quite answers your question, because
No,
I
I was
think
just
it's just that your average, I guess, no, like in America, but I guess you would say like your average show is like really normal, like normal people. There's like nothing, like they do their normal lives and everyday job, but they still know, okay, this is like a homeopathic medicine that helps me if I feel really low. And like, and this is the tea that my grandmother already made when I had a sore throat. And like, this just gets passed on. And people trust their pharmacists 100% here. Like, it's different pharmacies here than like you can see them in the States. Like a pharmacy here is like a place with a counter, and then you have like all these magic mixtures in the background, and you can order something, you can go there and ask them for advice, and
It's
then
almost
they
like a
mix you
herbalist of
something, you can
sorts.
pick it up later. Yeah, and there's an education for that. Like it's not just you can just walk in and become a pharmaceutical expert. There's like this an education, and then there are certificates, and it's like a bit of a hurdle to become anything when it's health concerned in Austria.
Great.
And it's expensive to do that education too,
I'm
for
sure.
most.
So it sounds like, there's a lot of things going on there that maybe are sort of subtler, or people are doing it like friends are, but they're kind of keeping it under wraps for a little bit. I've kind of have a two-part question here. Where, like, first of all, what do you think the how do you think creativity, because you mentioned that the children there are trying to do now outside classes versus inside classes with phones. What do you think the relationship with creativity, how does that influence? Is
Oh,
there more opportunity because with the technology now they can do more things, or
100%.
being outside they can sit and be like, wow, here I am in the mystery of nature. Like, how do you feel that this influence of indoor outdoor helps with their, growing creativity?
First of all, like it's like not every child has the chance to grow up like that. But then to your question of creativity, and I just had a great conversation with Sam Gandy about that exact thing. And I second with him is like this feeling of when you are encouraged to explore your creativity and the wonders of nature at a very early age, chances are that this is manifested inside of you, right? Like as also trauma manifests and is inside you, like you also then maybe have that pattern of sense of awe, wonder, and curiosity about nature. And that curiosity has a ripple effect and extends to other areas of your life then, so to speak. Another thing is, I feel if you are in nature and you are encouraged to listen to a river, right? Or to you have like you have the smell of the air changing when it rains, and when the seasons are changing, right? You learn about the development of a caterpillar to a butterfly. You might start to garden like your first carrots, and then I even remember as a child how amazing it is. You put a seed in there and suddenly you have like a full carrot, and then you can eat it, and then you compost the rest. So you learn about the circle of life. And so I guess being like you learn inherently this being curious is a good thing, open-mindedness. You understand the cycle of water. You might not be able to explain it, but you know it, and so you might turn off the water when you brush your teeth. And so like I think this is encouraging, and I feel, I mean, we know how healthy it is to spend time in nature, but also the fact that you have to first make the toys, with which then you play with your people, like your friends, rather than you get something ready-made out of plastic or you know, or even wood maybe, but there is a little less imagination needed. But can you remember like those pictures of children that are just like, I remember it in a park in London. There were like a lot of smaller kids, and like this little boy was just like taking a huge breath, and then he jumped on the ground and thought he would jump through water and then run through water and come out the other side, and everybody was just cheering him on. I know from our standpoint, you're like, you know, like, yeah, what the heck? But in reality, I remember as a child, you really mean it. Like
Right.
your imagination really puts you there. And I think, wouldn't it be wonderful if we as grown-ups still have the sense of that and would actually respect creative curiosity as something valuable and not as something you should be ashamed of because you're childish, especially in a teenage time when you try to be grown up.
Yeah, it's so interesting in terms of how, you know, both the connection between curiosity and creativity, which we'll talk about in a second, but also the, I like the idea of the teaching children to be open to listening to non-human conversations and how you can learn from just like listening to the trees or the babbling brook or the birds that are overhead or the crunch that's happening under your feet or the sensation of the moss between your feet. You know, I'm not sure exactly what the sort of terrain is out there, but I imagine kind of forest terrain. And so just to get someone into that space where they can sort of shut off what they're, again, where in an almost way that whole curiosity thing comes into play, because with the tech stuff, right, you know, you don't really have to be curious. It's all right there. I want an answer, boom. I don't even have to think about it. I can get it in seconds, bam, you know, instead of like you know, having to spend the time to actually unpack the sounds of the forest or what have you. And I think
And you
that's
can run, right? You can get physically tired. I think this is also something like the, what we now also learn with psychedelic experiences, embodiment and dealing with stress. But just, you know, I think it's nicer you go out on a bike up in the mountain or run in the mountain than going from, you know, gym station to the next station to the next station, like rigorously. But everything has its goods and bad, and I think a healthy mix does it. Like the same thing with technology. I think it's very important that you learn any new tool and technology, especially also when you grow up, right? Develop so fast. So what you learn in school is already old. So like then if you can then replicate that sense of curiosity and apply it to whatever else you find in front of you, this is just fantastic. And they then might find like a whole new and healthier way of doing technology and applying technology or design if they chose to be in like that sort of career or any career really. I think, I don't know. I guess maybe it's just hope, but I hope that is true. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and definitely providing a variety of tools and not just one tool is definitely a good way to sort of keep that open. All right, so here's the million-dollar question. If you get it
Oh
wrong, I'm
God.
gonna stop the podcast right now. No, I'm just kidding. So
Okay, cool.
what is creativity to you? When you say creativity, you're doing all this work with design and, you know, looking at sort of
Oh my
systems and
God.
everything else. What is, in your S and your feel, what, you know, first thing that pops in your head, what is creativity?
The curiosity of exploring and listening and letting ideas flow through you. I think you need to be open, like you have like a certain openness for ideas to flow through you, and then skill sets to apply them into a reality, or maybe not the skill set yet, maybe you're just learning. But I really believe that there are a million ideas out there, and somehow you're the right channel at the right time, and this one person that gets it, and then there's a certain outcome. I don't know if that's a good answer or a bad answer, but I feel like this
Yeah,
is a
well,
genuine.
we're still rolling, so we're good. We're good. So,
It's like me.
no, I really like that idea too. And then also, you know, because I think, you know, what is the difference between there's like this internal creativity and this external, you know? And so I like what you're saying that there's both the exploring and letting the ideas flow, but I do that all the time and I don't necessarily feel necessarily like I'm doing something creative. I might be, you know, thinking creatively, but then also, okay, now how do I take this and try and like put it into this three-dimensional material plane in some sort of way, whether it's an idea or an image or, you know, a design or a conversation or what have you. I think that's really where sort of also then the creativity comes into play in a way where then you can begin to share that with others. And it's also so interesting too, you know, while you say you can be the only channel sometimes for some of these creative ideas, like how often you see multiple ideas pop up. I don't know what they call this. I think maybe Sheldrake calls this genetic field, but they all pop up at the same time in different places in the world, or an idea, or like a design, or some sort of like new way of looking at something. So it's almost like, whatever's out there in the creative field is waiting to be expressed. And then, like you say, some of these people are channels that can tap into it and then express it. And that's the next step. Obviously skills come into play there, but sometimes it's good just kind of be even sort of amateur, just kind of like putting things together and seeing how it looks. And that can really not inhibit your creativity, whereas maybe someone with too many skills might be like, oh, it's got to be this, 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 and it you lose the rawness. I think there's something about creativity that's raw, very beginning at least.
At the beginning, at least, I would say so. I think that's where psychedelics might come into the play as well, right? If like we talk so much about setting, blah, blah, blah. But I think, again, from the childhood, like curiosity and wonder, you then grow up in a certain system with a certain perspective of who you are and what you can and can't do. Like you carry eventually some shame about, who you are and how you create and do things. You restrict yourself or you get restricted, and mostly both is true. And then you sit there and you fiddle on your design and you're like, oh, I can't do that because, and like I ah oh, this is a little bit big, or like this is a bit too small, or what is this person gonna think? And I really feel this is the right direction, but what would my parents think even, right? And then and this is just how you make a big idea small, or like it just you kill it before it's actually able to blossom. And I think this restrictions is really helpful. Like deadlines for me are really great. Like I wrote my master thesis the 5 days before I had to hand it in the night. But or like even 3 days, like your firecracker. But I think there are other restrictions that are helpful to not maybe have. Like, of course, so if you design anything, you want to understand the context. So you learn a lot about things, and then you create, and then later you edit. And so I really love that. Forgot from who it was, but it's like you just blur it all out, and then you edit it later. And it's also true in a way that if you're the creator and the editor, it's very difficult because you're too close to the subject. But then when you leave things being, and you get like another perspective, and then you go back in, and I think psychedelics in many ways, what they might also do is they free you from your own restrictions that you can't do certain things, right? Despite everything else that we talk about in psychedelics, I think it also helps you maybe come up with a new setting that frees you from the restrictions. And then you, as a grown-up creative, have suddenly the skill set that you, they took years, right, to get there. You might think of a certain problem also as a science, like a scientist, for example, and for many years, maybe 10 years of your life, but you're restricted. And you're restricted and you're restricted and you're trying to make it work and it just doesn't happen, right? And then you take a psychedelic and maybe it just helps you because you thought of that problem and it's right in front of you. The answer is usually right in front of you. Like this is also when you wake up and you suddenly have that idea and you thought of that for so long and it's getting so annoying and so frustrating and you hate everything and then suddenly it's there. And then people are like, oh, what do you mean you just had that idea yesterday? And like, and then it seems so easy, but the struggle, like it's like a bit like the hero's journey, right? The struggle, you need to go through that somehow. But yeah.
The epiphanies, when they come through, it's like they're so sudden, bam, and even though you've been working on it for, like you said, years or weeks or however long, months, and then all of a sudden all the right alignments of things around you come into play. Oh, what, hadn't I thought of this before? And I think we
I
chatted,
know.
let's talk about this a little bit, about the Archimedes and the Eureka and all these other different ways that people are sort of creating and coming up with discoveries through just sort of playing. And I think that's another part of creativity. It's a lot of play that's involved. You gotta be okay with mistakes. That's where I think it's interesting. You're talking about how you have this big raw idea, but you gotta like kind of you hone it down over time. You don't want to get it honed down so much that you lose the idea. But you also have this sort of this range of like needing to play, needing to make mistakes, experimenting a little bit,
And
trying.
learning that it's not a bad thing, right?
Yeah,
If a
exactly.
kid falls down and you're like somebody's immediately running towards, like, oh my God, blah 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 blah, like it suddenly hurts so much more than when somebody is just checking if you're okay, but then you get up and you climb the tree again for the 5th millionth time. So I think it's also the help of getting over this fear. But again, I think there is something really to it, to the physical aspect of, I don't know, did we talk about that? You know, when you're so angry about something when you're little and you just cry and you cry and cry and cry to the point of total exhaustion. And then suddenly things are like much more easier and clearer and you find yourself in that sort of hangover state. And I think there is something to it when we think of how can we have like psychedelic experience without that hallucination, without having to go for this 6-hour journey. I'm thinking like and the short journeys, like with like as much as I learned because I have not had like it, for example, a DMT experience, it's also really exhausting just in a very short amount of time. But then others are very physically exhausting. I mean, if you're up for 6, 7, 8 hours and you're going for a full psilocybin trip and you get spit out the other end, you made it out alive, so to say, you're exhausted. But I also think when you're that tired of some like physically, you're calmer also. And maybe that calmness then allows you for new ways of thinking and feeling and seeing, I don't know, and this your senses are somewhat numb and somewhat sharper. And I guess a lot of creatives that I know, and I myself included, love working when everything is quiet, right? When others are working or sleeping in the night, like this is, it feels the world is more quiet. And when everything around you is more quiet, you can see sharper.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to, you sort of wear yourself out, and then you have to say settle back, and then in your relaxness or in your exhaustion, like you just like, wow, I hadn't even observed this because I was looking for it. Even with journeys, and you hear a lot of times people the first couple journeys they have, and they're trying to have an experience, and they're like, oh, I didn't even have an experience because they're so busy looking for the experience, right? Instead of like, oh, I'm in the experience. I don't have to look for it. It's something that I don't know what it is. And then, of course, that wears down over time. With your, because you mentioned this earlier, and I think this is a fascinating idea, and specifically around psychedelic stuff. When you see creativity and psychedelics, where are the kind of the edges right now that you're seeing, especially because you're talking to so many creatives out there? Where are the spaces where people are still a little timid to go to, or are trying to work on it, but it's just not being accepted much by sort of the overall conversation? Where are the kind of the edges or the areas where people are like, oh, we need to keep that more quiet, if you will? Where are the edges of creativity and psychedelics?
It's really that where you want to keep it a bit more quiet. It's the fear of thinking, is this really my creativity or am I cheating? Right? If because we learned that things have value if you worked really hard on it. And so that idea that it might be coming to you easy, you immediately question it. And so I guess when you're saying, and or they think you're totally stupid. It's like, why, like this, then they definitely immediately will disregard that idea because, you were high. So why, how can this have any value? So I think it's like both ways. And then of course, the fact that you don't quite know what psychedelic, when to take, in what setting, and what context, and how to prepare for it. So it's all a bit of a self-test. And of course, the fact that, well, you can't just buy it. It's not quite legal. And so and then lastly, it's that fear also, I guess. But what if I then need it? What if I take a psychedelic and I have such a great breakthrough that I feel I can't do work, great work anymore without the help of a psychedelic? So I also had these conversations, right? It's like even with, even with cocaine, like so many, like in the entertainment industry, art like that I know and fashion, just been like taking coke to focus, not really healthy. But the question then is even like, can I still operate without it? And it's not even like a physical addiction. It's more so that mental thing of, okay, now I had like a glimpse. Now I want more, and I feel like in the psychedelic feel that I came across so many people that are just chasing one trip after the next. That doesn't necessarily have to do with creative output or being a creative. They're not necessarily designers or scientists, just like also investors, like or marketers or like PR people or life coaches. I don't know, but I think this is also really bizarre that we're trying to talk so much about the respectful way of using medicine, and then you have like someone saying like, oh, you know, taking a little bit of MDMA and ketamine because it makes me more social, and I'm taking that every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday because I like to go clubbing like that. I think that is also not really helpful for a general conversation about, you know, what psychedelics can do to help. So I think, yeah, I guess we're gonna figure it out.
Okay, yeah. And you said a little bit here and I guess I've kind of always thought this to some degree, but it's a new way to look at it, because I always have viewed it from like more of the mystical experience approach, which is like somehow if you take a substance that's external to you, it's like dismisses the validity of the experience, you know. And you're saying that also is the case with creativity. Well, if you take the substance, maybe this creativity didn't come from me, so therefore it's lesser than, quote unquote, right? And that's such an interesting mindset when we're constantly, you know, I mean, the idea of a relationship with something else in the environment helping to be creative seems even more powerful to, in my opinion. But I do agree that that rhetoric is out there, especially regarding, you know, mystical experiences. Oh, that's not a pure mystical experience, or what have you. That's not a pure creative experience. But as an artist, like, you know, I watched my art develop so much, you know, even as I was kind of more imaginative at the beginning. But now I have something to reference in terms of my artwork through my experiences. And, you know, even if it's all I'm doing is drawing a map, if you will, or drawing a photo of what I saw, like that's probably
And it
never been seen
develops
by
over
anyone else
time,
before. Yeah, for sure. Huh? Yeah.
right? I think what you're saying as well is this, or maybe like now that you say that, I'm thinking you already had that inside you, and something was blocked in a way. I think anyone who had suddenly had this Eureka moment with taking a psychedelic, the answer was already within them. So it's not necessarily cheating; they just see a little bit clearer, right?
I
So
mean,
maybe they cheat their way to speed things up. I don't
I would
know.
even say the other side of it, even if it wasn't, because I've had some pretty strong ayahuasca or other experiences where it's like, my imagination is good, but it's not that good. You know, like, what is this space that I'm in right now? And so people bring that back and then work on that as an artistic piece, I think is really interesting. And it almost changes art from an inner creative expression to an external adventure. You know, you're going out there and seeing the other worlds, and then bringing back. We don't have yet a camera for that, but we have our ability to draw or paint or what have you to represent. And then, of course, we can do that in a nonverbal way. So now we can sort of share more of the experience, because you're sharing the sort of the nuances that aren't just words. So I think
Is
that's
it
something.
like co-creation even? If you think of how long, for example, mushrooms are in your system, and then let's say they'll give a mushroom trip, and then you paint, kind of paint with the mushrooms in a
Have
way. I
you
like the thought somewhat.
ever tried to paint or create while on anything, or is it kind of been always
No.
the case? Is that a difficult, would you think that would be a difficult process for you, or what's your thought about
I
creating
don't know. I think
materials?
I will have difficulties finding the pencil and, you know, getting it on a paper before a mushroom trip. But I do feel like maybe like lower doses, for example, of LSD could be really helpful, or you know, also like lower doses of anything. I'm just thinking I could be quite not micro, but also not too high. And I think it's really up to the individual. But and what you're trying to achieve. But I also think it would be a shame to somehow use this very powerful tools for by means of productivity. In a way, I think, yeah, it could
You
be
see
very
creativity as,
interesting.
you might see creativity as productivity, whereas maybe I don't either. So maybe that's also a difference in, because you're doing creativity as your work
I
that.
mean, creative output, right? I think like if I would sit and be like, oh, you know, like here are like 50 things that I'm trying to solve, and now I'm preparing, I'm going intentionally into an LSD experience, and then I might find more clarity or can edit. Why not? I guess I'm still like, I'm also really interested in figuring it out when is also the right, I'm really interested in that, like when is the right point for what person to take what psychedelic in what dose, like what could be a possible protocol there. When I mean productivity, I'm just thinking, I'm a little bit sad that of course, a conversation immediately goes for psychedelics for longevity and productivity and getting ahead of your competitors. I much rather have conversations about how does some psychedelic help us maybe be kinder to ourselves and to the environment, and learn to have empathy again. And that it's just like, of course, also again, like this is not a guarantee for everybody who's like is using a psychedelic. They amplify whatever you are, and so I don't, wouldn't it be nice if bad people would take a psychedelic and suddenly become like less narcissistic and just more kind and positive and flip 180? But right, not around just yet, or maybe not. I don't know. I probably know way too little about it. I really do know way too little about it.
Yeah, I mean that's I mean I've heard from a lot of people narcissism is actually the difficult thing to work with because you get really excited about, oh yeah, I just did this amazing thing. Look at me, top of the world, that type of thing. In terms of the painting with the creativity, though, I think, yeah, it would be great to even create a class or some sort of like external thing where you start to learn, not again as a productive measure, but as a way of charting the worlds beyond the mind, if you will, and finding out exactly what is the right dose that would be the most f accessible for creativity. Because for me, same thing. When I was people like, oh, you need to try and paint and have a journey at the same time. And the paintbrush, the canvas would get farther away from me. It feel like I couldn't quite concentrate on the thing. And so somebody else was like, oh, actually, what you need to do is to start painting first, and then take something. So you're already in the painting mode, and then as you come on. Instead of just like, oh, I'm tripping now, I'm gonna start painting, and then that's really hard. And then as you come on, but I still had trouble with that. And then there's this one story of I wanted to write something down or write a story while I was having a journey, and I was all excited about it, and I was having this super big journey, and I don't know if we talked about this before, and I started writing, the story down, and the next morning I woke up and I was like, oh, that's right, I have that story, I want to check it out, right?
That's right.
And I looked to find it, and it had been writing in three dimension, so everything was down into the paper and up out of the paper, so it was all letters on top of there. So I couldn't
Oh
make
my God.
anything. So that's the one other side, I guess, for creativity, is you start really breaking down the boundaries of what is, reality, if you will, and what you see, and how this sort of the visions that layer upon what we see in this world. And then that gets hard to translate because you're not dealing with the same sort of dimensionality, if you will, as you are in some of these journey spaces. So, but that would be a really
But that
fascinating.
is great because that also teaches us that we are in a different dimension. And then coming back to this, so we can't just straight on one-on-one apply what we learned to our dimension and the reality we have to exist in, right? And I think that's why it's sometimes so hard to come back to like it, because the light is so much nicer and like it's you filter so much more connected, and then you somehow get out of this and you're trying to hold on to that eventually, if it was a nice experience, of course. And but what I'm thinking also of is that story of that architect that took LSD in order to design a mental health truck, like clinic. And I'm thinking here it is also really interesting to apply a psychedelic state thinking to a designing a real world experience, right? Because if you design a hospital on LSD for normal people, I don't like call people normal people, we're kind of all not normal. But and what is normal anyway, so I don't need to go into that because then you and I are going to be here forever. But if you design like that, then it might be helpful for some, but then others are more fearful of other experiences. You might mean it really well, and you design a certain format that calms you down, and somebody else gets absolute anxiety of it. I feel like it's even the respect of knowing that some people are just very highly sensitive. And so I always feel like if you're a highly sensitive person, you design for the 2 or 3% on this planet that get it. The others might feel calm and something is working and they just enjoy the room. But if you're the person who I read it in a book, I think it's even called the highly sensitive person. Like I walk into a room and I feel the energy and the mood of the person who arranged the flowers. And that's just really, really it. Others won't, but they somewhat subconsciously still, there's something right or something wrong. they might not really get it. And I think a lot of creatives are very sensitive. And I think it's very, very interesting that less, maybe less connected to their creativity, individuals feel more open and receiving colors and being more open, creative, and God knows what, and appreciate the widening of perception and senses, where creative sensitives appreciate that this like same psychedelic, and suddenly you feel more grounded, more focused, more calm, and you still have all these perceptions, but they are just a little bit numb, but that doesn't make them less beautiful, but they are maybe less irritating. Like speaking to friends of mine that had that experience for like 3 months, 6 months after psilocybin, the full psilocybin journey, they did feel more okay with themselves, which also is a state of creating better and designing better. And you know, like that blinking light, that like that somewhere in the room is just not that distracting anymore. And usually it's like people don't get it. Like, you know, I've been called neurotic because I go walk into a hotel room and I see this stupid red dot on the TV, and then I see like this red dot of the fire warning system or whatever it's called. I can't recall what it's called in English. And like I'm gonna lie there and like it's like, yes, I can close my eyes, but it's still there and I know it's there and it drives me mad. Like, and I'm just like that. And then I hear this one sound. And I constantly hear, I think noise pollution and light pollution is also something that we completely underestimate. We really traded a lot of our convenience for health. Like there's always noise around us. You can always hear cars in bigger cities, these sirens, like people talking next to you in the other flat, watching TV. It's like it's a constant and it can drive you crazy. And some people are better in shutting that off, but maybe it's just an assumption. These people might also be not hearing music and seeing colors as much as those people see colors and hear music, that also have to endure the struggles of seeing a lot more color and hear a lot more noise. And I feel it interesting that psychedelics seem to balance out both a little bit.
Yeah, I like this idea of designing places where people are in different spaces, and seeing things differently, having different sort of perceptions of the world through these states. Because yeah, I mean, imagine, I don't know exactly. Maybe you can tell us in a minute about some of the different results that came from that. But yeah, blinking lights, fluorescent lights, corners of rooms, like doorways that are shut with something dark. Like all those different types of things that would make it difficult, something, really tight spaces, very sort of formalized, sanitized rooms, like all that kind of stuff. I think you just feel like, ooh, more plants, these different types of things. What were some, I don't know if you know, some of the things that this person discovered in terms of his exploration to design here, and then what would you include in? Obviously no blinking lights would be key there. Sound pollution low if possible, but also you get to that point in sound pollution where if it's too quiet, then you get the wah-wahs, right? And so, like, I'm sure probably everyone's been in a quiet bathroom, and all of a sudden, everything says wah-wah-wah-wah-wah. You're like, there's not an actual
Yeah,
thing here,
but
but
isn't it
my head's
funny that
going.
nature is never quiet?
Yeah, for sure, huh?
I think what we also shouldn't forget is that we created the bullshit ourselves in the first place. So I think when you think about designing in that way, I think it would be very interesting to think of where do I design from in the first place and for what, right? I mean, and that is just really true to us in our Western convenient little world where other things matter more than for other people on this planet. Like I think we often forget that we're still like very few people that live like that. Like there are others that are like they're living different and they build different, and we can only learn from that. I'm just something, you know. It's just so wowing how much we are happy to trade for the immediate satisfaction and our convenience. Because even if you know certain things are bad, you choose to not do them, or like, yeah, just this one more time because it's convenient. And I think like it looks like us humans, we are inherently lazy, and so that's just it. And to your question about what the learnings were, I must confess I read a lot, forgot most. But it would be very, very interesting for sure for everybody to look that up. I think what I learned from it another way was one of my ex-boyfriends had was then ultimately diagnosed with a schizophrenic paranoia, and so I do have a little bit more of a insight into a person, how they then suddenly perceive a room when the walls seem to be closing in, right? And so how interesting it is that some people, for example, are afraid of going into the woods when it's dark, and then suddenly when you have been on the psychedelic, you understand you're so safe there. Or like, it also then depends, did you grow up in a town, or did you grow up on the countryside? So you're afraid of different things. I think we can't just generalize that at all. So
And
yeah, I
even
think.
one experience to the next, like you sometimes I'll feel like so comfortable, like, oh, this is my home. I've known this space forever. And other times I'm like, okay, what's going on? So even again, that set and setting thing, while it's cliche, it's so accurate in that. What do you, I know we're getting kind of close here, but I have one question from actually from your list of questions the other day that I don't know if we totally jumped in fully on, but I'm curious to hear your
Uh-oh.
opinion. What is your vision of the future of entheogens?
Oh no. Right. I hope you're gonna answer that question for myself too. Oh my God. What's my vision? I would love to see a world where we as designers are not just hoping that we can design a better future, but we're actually allowed to and able to do so. Just a place where we learned to work in synergy with nature. I have no idea how to do that, but I would love to learn the skill. And I am a person that talks to a river and the tree and the wind like forever. Like now it's out there. I've never stopped doing that. But I never did that intentionally or with a sacred thought behind it. But I would love a world where it would be normal that we would sit with a river and be like, look, what did we do wrong? What did we do wrong to you? How would you like to flow? What would you like us to do and see, and kind of even be in service of regenerating what we fucked up so gloriously, right? And by all means, then figure out a way how we can, as a species that's growing so fast with technologies like artificial intelligence that is using up so much energy, and like it's more of a how can we like it would that would be my biggest hope, right? Or the planet to regenerate itself after AI destroyed us all because, realized and titled us as labeled us as, redundant and not
We're
necessarily for
eco-terrorists.
planetary wealth.
Like, isn't that the wasn't that the Terminator thing, right? There's like, the worst thing
I
for the
become
planet is humans, so we
Terminator.
need to get rid of humans, right? Okay, well, that's good for the planet, I guess, and that's so good for humans. So but yeah, no, that's a beautiful vision of like, how do we connect back to the earth? And I think those conversations, and I think that's something that we kind of step away from in the mental health model of psychedelics, is that like, oh, we're having a direct conversation with this material, this mushroom, whatever that we're speaking with, that is an entity that exists on this planet, is also feeling the same things. We get stuck in like, okay, what is the person in the white coat telling me, or whoever else? But getting that back into that sort of deep conversation with the psychedelics themselves, or the entheogens, I think is we can learn a lot from that. These noetic
And
ideas.
that's the thing. If you are on a mushroom trip and you suddenly hold different materials, for example, like I immediately realized that feels wrong, that feels right, and then you question it afterwards, and then you're like, okay, suddenly having this awareness, and you can't make it unseen. Like in a conversation with Robin Carr Harris, he was really telling me, and it's true. It's like once you're open, you can't make it unseen. Like once you know, and you feel it. It's like this, you know it theoretically, or you really feel it. And then the question is just how can we learn to do better? And I think we can learn from other cultures a lot about that. You just need to be open in having these conversations and making. And it
Awesome.
doesn't need to be all hippie.
Right.
I'm just putting it out there.
The whole variety of ranges, right? Absolutely. Well, thank you, Alex. We're going to open up. Rachel has some comments and a question.
Oh yes. So we had a lot of comments saying like, blessings, soul family. Thank you guys for going live. Just like some nice comments. But I had a question just because when you were talking about, children and just their connection, this ability to just like interface with the world in this like pure sense. They don't have all this extra societal stuff on them. They haven't been told like, oh, you can't do that. So they're in this beautiful space cognitively. So when you were speaking, I was actually thinking of a story about me and my dad, because my dad was a professor in computer science. So I grew up with tech a lot. I learned how to code when I was very young, and my dad always talked to me, never like as a child. He was always talking to me as like a little human. And I remember he brought me into his office one day, and he was like, "Rachel, did you know that a machine can't actually make a perfect circle?" And he showed me, because he worked with algorithms and graphics and stuff, and so it was just showing me how like the computer can't make a perfect circle. It can like maybe shade it in such a way so it can look like a perfect circle. But he's like, but you know who can make a perfect circle? You. Human beings can. So never think that like the tech is, it's, you are so much more brilliant. These are just helpers for us to have our visions come to life. So I think when we're talking about AI and tech, as someone who's grown up with it, and as a project manager, worked with a lot of creatives like yourself, working with clients who don't know what the heck they're talking about and ruining design and all this kind of stuff. So like this infusion of like that beauty and functionality and technology are all the same. It's not that we make something less beautiful to make it functional. There is a beauty in something being simple and having a simple solution to what maybe seems very complicated. And so bringing this around to a question in terms of being a designer and an artist, Alex, do you have a particular medium that you have a favorite medium to work with, whether that's drawing or it's tech or like whatever tools you have available to you? Is there a medium that you found that like with psychedelics you have the most resonance with to get like whatever is up here into like the material world?
Well, first of all, like, thanks for sharing this story. I think it's also really beautiful that your dad treated you like a little human, like your own little entity, and like just little. And that showed you also how our technologies can evolve with us and we can evolve with them in a very positive relationship. I think this is really beautiful. What I also would have like thought is like we can then go even into nature and look at nature closer through a microscope and see how nature creates the perfect shapes, right? And then how you then see those shapes that you can see when you walk into a church and look at a window, how you also see those shapes when you are tripping eventually. It's like this interesting
DNA, all that.
of like geometry, right? I love painting abstract because I'm trying to let be not perfect then, which of course does fail every time, and I spend hours doing like a little big, I love just really doing with like things with pen and paper a lot. I think it feels more grounded, but I'm actually on my computer all the time, and like for that tools I'm like from Procreate to like I just did like the drawings for the upcoming conference, and after doing 50 million versions with 50 million people, I just sat down and did like a pen and paper drawing that I then made into ink that I then scanned and then worked on with Illustrator.
I
I
love that.
you know And then do Figma a lot, which I use for all the things that it actually wasn't made to use be used. And
That's
so
the best way to
yeah,
use those things.
I'm actually using all sorts of tools. I'm also doing a lot with all sorts of AI tools now. So I mean, being very wary of that, and I'm trying to learn a lot more on what does it mean to you to use certain tools in a mindful way, like more mindful way, like from hosting the website, like green hosting, what does it even mean? Like really question things. But yeah, I guess I do everything and use everything. I love the mix and I really need it. I love reading actual book. I actually really don't like, for example, reading like
I agree
digital
with you.
files
I need
or
a
like
real
ebooks.
book, a real like I need like bookmarks. I need to make notes.
Yeah.
I need all that stuff.
And it feels like also the page, like, but then it's the problem again. Like, the book is horrible designed and like so bad, like the whole content been degraded. I actually am sadly a person, I buy the book by the cover.
Me too.
So do you know the Creative Act from Rick Rubin? For me, it's the most perfect book ever designed. Like the weight of the pages, the smell, like the typography, like the kerning, like the light, like line height. Like I just open this book and I instantly feel calm before even reading a word. So
What was the name of the
yeah.
book?
The Creative Act.
The
I
Creative
think it's
Act.
the Creative Act way of being by
Okay.
Rick Rubin. Yeah.
Put that in the show
I
notes.
think I gifted it a million times already. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, well, thank you so much, Rachel, for the questions and the comments.
Yeah.
And Alex, really appreciate you being here. Is there anything that we didn't touch on today that you'd like to cover? And then while you're at that, also, if you want to throw out to your website and other ways that people can contact you outside of here, we can put those in the show notes, but also just for anyone that's live or hearing this later or wants to jump on and find out more about what you're doing.
Oh yeah, thank you again. I got carried away. I really enjoyed the conversation and it's so cool. Yeah, I mean, I have the website. It's psychedelics.design right now. And from there, you can find everything like from the Substack to the podcast to like, yeah, well, it's not online, like research projects that we're doing. But the new conference is in November. It's going to be online again. Speakers are not going to be announced until the next couple of weeks or so because like I'm still curating with my friend Floris from Blossom, with Zoe Wilder and Shalin Salazar. Like we're just sitting down and trying to merge everybody that would like to talk. I always love to speak to people, and if anybody wants to collaborate, contribute, do some work together, I'm always up for that and also always there to help. So just reach out. I'm a little bit delayed with emails at the moment, I have to confess. Yeah.
Happens. It happens. It happens. All right, and well, thank you so much for being here and for sharing what you're up to. I'm excited to hear your new projects. I know you're gonna have a book eventually coming out too, and I'll work with your
Yeah,
podcast
we'll
and
see.
past shows. It's all out there. So I'm just throwing it out there. Now we can have accountability and all of our work,
Man.
but
So many things you hold myself accountable to
Right,
now.
sure enough, sure enough. Yeah, well, we really enjoyed this conversation on creativity. Hopefully, we have you back here another time. We can dive more into the creative process. I think this is something that is sort of a natural adjunct to this psychedelic work, this entheogenic work, is really talking about, how do we create, how do we take the ineffable and turn it into the effable, if you will, or how do we find some way to turn things and put things in the material realm, whether it be painting and arts in that way, or more sort of on a larger scale, even with conversations and community. That's all part of the creative process too. So it's been really a joy having you here and chatting it up. Reminder everybody out there that we're going every live every 2 weeks. So our next podcast is going to be on Sunday, July 20th with Benjamin Montan. He is a new board member for Decriminalized Nature. So we get a chance to chat with him, hear what he's up to, and hear his insights on the ecosystem as well. Next week, Sunday, this episode with Alex will be posted on our Spotify account and other platforms. So thank you all for listening in now, and look forward to hearing you in the future in terms of our new platforms. Appreciate it, Alex. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank
Thank you for
you.
being here, and looking forward to much more. Until next time, tune in, stay rooted, and let's grow together. Have a great night, everybody. Bye now.
Everybody.